Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. The head of the agency that manages the Alaska Permanent Fund is getting a raise. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation's Board of Trustees approved a 10% pay increase for CEO Devin Mitchell on Tuesday, bringing his total salary to more than $420,000 a year. Board Chair Jason Bruni says the raise comes after Mitchell got high marks on an annual performance evaluation conducted in a closed-door session.
We're very happy with Devin's performance, and we had a very good discussion with him about what happened this past year and put some metrics in place for this next year.
It's the second year in a row Mitchell has gotten a 10% raise for leading management of Alaska's roughly $80 billion nest egg. The board gave its evaluation verbally in an executive session to avoid it being accessed by public record requests. That's allowed under a policy change approved by the board in 2023 after the controversial firing of its previous CEO. During the two-day meeting in Juneau, permanent fund managers said the fund is performing well. Its target return is 5% above inflation, and it's ahead of that mark by nearly half a percentage point in the year to date. But the fund is trailing that target over the past 5 years, according to the chief investment officer Marcus Frampton. But he says few firms are hitting the so-called CPI plus 5 goal.
I don't think any peers I'm aware of have hit CPI plus 5 over the last 3 years, so we're not unusual in that respect.
Frampton says the permanent fund is ahead of its performance benchmark this year and over the past 3 and 5 year periods. The performance benchmark is essentially a measure of the value added by permanent fund managers while accounting for the structure of the state's portfolio and swings in the market. And a massive sea lion will no longer be terrorizing people and pets in Petersburg's South Harbor. It was killed this weekend, but not by law enforcement. Instead, they collaborated with two Tlingit brothers who plan to use the hide and whiskers for traditional regalia. KFSK's Hannah Floor has this story.
The sea lion fills the back of Brandon Ware's pickup, hanging off the tailgate. He's wrestling with fat and fur, slowly skinning the animal.
So all I have to do is gently run my knife through it, and that way it separates the fat from the body and pulls the skin down a little bit more, just like peeling a banana.
Ware grew up hunting marine mammals, mostly seal and sea otter. Now he sews them into hats and mittens, vests and tunics. He says he's not sure what he'll make with this fur, but the whiskers will go on a shukyet, a traditional Tlingit dancing headdress.
So when you're dancing, they kind of sway in the wind. It's just that part of the decoration. That being said, I don't think I've ever seen a shukyet with whiskers this long on it.
He and his brother Billy Ware shot the sea lion the previous day. They were hunting it because for the past week or so, it had been hunting people and pets in Petersburg's South Harbor. It's not an uncommon problem in Petersburg. Harbormaster Gloria Ann Wolin says when there's an aggressive sea lion hanging around, she's always concerned about people with animals and little kids. She says the sea lions can climb up and move around on the docks, no problem.
It's a big lumbering mass, and it makes a lot of noise, and they bark like dogs, and, you know, they get a lot of motivation. There's a lot of aggression built up, and they can move pretty quick.
Wolin was getting lots of complaints about the latest aggressive sea lion, which she guesses weighed upwards of 2,500 pounds. Federal law protects sea lions and other marine mammals. If law enforcement wants to kill a problem sea lion, they need permission from the feds. Petersburg Police Chief Jim Kerr says the department started the process of getting that permission, but they didn't end up needing it. Brandon Ware had heard about the aggressive sea lion through the grapevine. He told Kerr he'd love a chance to subsistence harvest the animal. Kerr was enthusiastic about the idea.
That means it doesn't go to waste. And so basically, the police department was able to alleviate the public safety concern, and Brandon Ware, being an Alaska Native, could legally harvest it for cultural reasons and continue the tradition of harvesting sea lions.
People who live on the coast and are a quarter Native or are an enrolled member of a coastal tribe are allowed to harvest marine mammals under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Kerr gave the brothers permission to use firearms in the harbor. He says knowing the family's history with hunting marine mammals, he trusted them and knew they'd take precautions. Brandon Ware says he took that responsibility seriously. He says they waited for a moment when the sea lion was out in the open, with no chance of a ricocheting bullet hitting something. And he says they were careful with shot placement, They didn't want to wound the animal, and they didn't want it to suffer.
There's a sense of, like, I need to do this right and take this seriously. It's almost like there's a pretty big weight on me, but it was good pressure. It's that good pressure that causes me to perform rather than to freeze up.
He shot the sea lion once in the head. Then his brother Billy did the same.
The shots were effective, clean and effective, didn't miss. They ended up working out perfect.
But it didn't all go according to plan. They towed the animal over to Petersburg's crane dock, planning to lift it into the back of Brandon Ware's pickup. They had it tied up and were hoisting it up just a bit in order to get a thicker line around it.
And as we were lifting it up on the big crane, the line snapped, and it sunk like a rock down to bottom.
Ware says there was a crowd. He and his brother, a few family members, police officers, a state trooper, all standing around, scratching their heads. The water was about 20 feet deep. They needed a diver. But only Alaska Natives were allowed to participate in the harvest, and they didn't know any Tlingit divers on the island. Petersburg's National Marine Fisheries Service officer came to the rescue. Extenuating circumstances, he said. Hire yourself a diver. Any diver. So they did. A couple of hours later, they hoisted the sea lion into the back of Ware's truck. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Flohr.
And a Sooog Stoon language game is quickly gaining recognition since its release in July 2023. KBBI's Jamie Deep has more on the game's development that teaches children around the world about Sukpiak culture.
Developing educational technology skyrocketed during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's when native nonprofit Chugachmut, known in part for its education and health services to tribes on the Kenai Peninsula, began developing an app that teaches Sooog Stoon language and school readiness skills for preschool-aged children. The app, named Nunaka, the Sooog Stoon word for my village, came out last year and has been recognized for its advancements in educational technology. Chugachmut Deputy Director Phyllis Wimberly says she came up with this idea more than a decade ago.
I've been thinking about this game since 2012, and it was a matter of getting the funding.
She says she wanted a game that taught the language and skills to prepare children for school, like counting and fine motor skills. The funding ended up coming from the federal government, and Chugachmut began developing the game in 2021. The game takes place in a fictional Sukpiak village. Players control a customizable character and play mini-games to complete tasks for their grandparents. They create regalia, go fishing, and pick berries, all while learning Sooog Stoon words. Wimberly says game developers visited Namwalik and Port Graham, two Sukpiak villages at the mouth of Kachemak Bay.
They met with our children. They met with the elders. They recorded elders speaking. It was really a wonderful experience for our game developers and for our elders and children as well.
Children from the villages even got to test the game before its release. Wimberly says it was a hit.
The children would just open their mouths. They were so thrilled with it, and they enjoyed playing it.
Wimberly says she hopes to keep ramping up the nonprofit's education department with plans for a language symposium in February. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
And a federal judge in Oregon and a Washington state court judge both issued rulings on Tuesday temporarily blocking the proposed merger between grocery giants Kroger and Albertsons, halting fears of numerous Alaska store closures. In Alaska, Kroger owns 11 Fred Meyer stores, while Albertson owns 24 Cars or Safeway stores. As part of the merger, the companies were prepared to sell off 18 of the state's grocery stores. Bridget Shaughnessy Smith is a spokeswoman for the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, a nonprofit that has lobbied against the merger. She calls the decision a big win for the state.
The grocery store competition we have is crucial to keeping prices fair, preserving consumer choice, and supporting the community well-being. This decision is a win for all Alaskans who rely on accessible and affordable food options, and we hope that it will effectively put an end to this monopoly threat.
Alaska's congressional delegation, as well as a couple dozen state lawmakers, also oppose the merger. Officials with Albertsons and Kroger argue the merger was necessary for the businesses to compete with major retailers that also sell food, like Walmart, Costco, and Amazon. Shaughnessy Smith says she hopes the wide opposition to the merger will discourage the grocery chains from appealing the court's decisions.
We're hoping that with the large amount of bipartisan opposition from all levels of government, as well as this decision from a federal court, that the companies will not pursue further legal action.
And now for a look at local weather. It's currently raining with a high near 40 degrees. Tomorrow also showers with some foggy patches and a low of around 35 degrees. You're listening to KTOO.